Good morning. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. You're listening to Dental MD Radio Show. And I do this show. I've been doing this show for almost 7 years now. And so you can look back in the archives and find out all kinds of things on various specific topics in holistic and natural dentistry. A lot of different areas, root canals, extractions, kids, orthodontics, what to do about wisdom teeth, you name it, different materials to use for fillings, what's the difference between an onlay and a crown, when do you need an onlay or a crown, do you need one? Those are questions that have been answered in many previous shows, and so please avail yourself of the archive on that's in the archive section on 1150 AM KKNW, which is 1150kknw.com. Just go there, scroll to Dental MD, and go to the archives. Okay, so today I am going to talk about children and choices in holistic dentistry, because we've been having a lot of parents coming in with very young children under the age of 3, and they've been to other dentists, or sometimes they have not yet been to other dentists, and they're concerned about teeth that have decay starting. And a lot of them have been given certain kinds of choices about what to do, and they're not satisfied with those choices. And so they're seeking alternatives. They come into the office. They have no idea if I'm actually going to be able to tell them anything new or different. And we do have a completely different way of managing that problem in young children. It is different. It's not mainstream. It's not the common way to do things. There are, for any choice you make, there are risks and benefits. So it's just very similar to the choice between different remineralizing agents. And everybody knows about fluoride, but there are other ways to remineralize teeth, and some of them are less toxic than fluoride. So why start with the thing that is the most invasive or the most toxic to solve a problem when there may be other ways to solve these problems that are not as invasive and not as toxic? So today I'm going to first address the very, very young children and what kinds of problems and issues come up for these very young children, how they can be managed, how they can be arrested, the decay arrested, and the process of the decay slowed and stopped, and how to prevent it, how to deal with it when it does start to happen, and what to do if it's severe. Because it does, sometimes people come in and the child already has an abscess or already has very, very deep decay that's to the nerve or almost to the nerve, or teeth that are breaking off because the decay is already so extensive. So people come in different stages, and there are different strategies depending on what's going on with the teeth and what the behavior ability of that child is. Because some 1.5-year-olds can sit still and don't mind having a cotton roll or having their tooth dried off. Some of them really don't mind that. And others, well, you know, just looking in there and counting the teeth is traumatic for them because they don't want to have their mouth open right now, you know, and so that's, but right now is when the appointment is. So it really just depends on the child's disposition, the parents, how far do you have to drive, how convenient is it to have multiple visits in order to get things done. So the first topic for today is going to be these very young kids, and we'll start with talking about decay. And then we'll move on to other issues that children have, transitioning from primary teeth to permanent teeth, orthodontics, should you wait until all the permanent teeth are in, or should you start sooner to try to create space for those permanent teeth? Does that make a difference? Is it worth doing? Why would it be worth doing? All of those questions. And how often to take x-rays on kids? That's another really common question. So why is it, sometimes I talk about the difficulty in finding alternative dental care. So before the end of this first segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about finding dentists that have alternative opinions, alternative methods and techniques and ways to manage common problems. So why is it so difficult to find holistic dentists? Well, for physicians, if you're going to find a doctor that's a physician, I mean, dentists are doctors too, but people always say dentists and doctors like it's two different things. But to be technically correct, it's dentists and physicians. So for physicians, these MDs, medical doctor MDs, have had to grapple with and come to terms with the fact that there are a lot of other types of physicians. They've had to deal with chiropractors, osteopaths, naturopaths, and all of these other types of physicians have their own medical schools. So these people graduate, they get out, they are doctors, they are physicians, and they are treating patients. And the medical doctors that are MDs, they have had to compete with this. And for a long time in history, there were attempts to undermine the practice by preventing other types of physicians from being able to get credentialed, being able to get licensure in states. There have been a lot of tactics designed to suppress alternatives, as everybody that listens to this show probably knows. But in the end, physicians have come to the understanding that there are other types of physicians besides the type that they are, the kind of schooling that they had, and the kind of license that they have. So yes, MDs have a different kind of training than all the other physicians because they have to do, well, osteopaths also learn surgical techniques, and I don't think naturopaths really do. Everything is pretty much non-surgical, to my understanding. But for MDs, they do have the specialized surgical areas that they can go into. And that is, there are no, you can't find a naturopathic ophthalmologist, for instance. Usually, I don't really think there are any, and that's an eye surgeon, not an eye doctor, but an eye surgeon. Cardiology specialty, neurology. I don't think there are naturopaths that have that level of specialty training where they have a surgical background and can get hospital privileges, et cetera, et cetera. So when you get to that level, if it's determined and you've agreed that you need a surgery, you're going to need an MD most likely to do that procedure. But aside from that sort of that nature of things, you can, if you want to at early stages and diagnostic stages, avail yourself of other like alternative types of physicians. Now, in dentistry, you do not have that choice. You don't have that option. There are no dental schools that are different, that are training naturopathic dentists. There just doesn't exist anything like that yet at this point. There are dentists that have been through the mainstream system who have gone on to get professional continuing education in holistic and biological natural concepts. And so when you find a natural or holistic dentist, they know at least a few things that are based on the concepts of natural medicine for the practice of dentistry, but they may not have received comprehensive training. They may still believe in some of the original mainstream concepts, Western medicine concepts versus the principles of natural medicine for approaching certain kinds of problems. So you're going to get a mixed bag. You really do have to call different offices with your specific problem and find out from different holistic dental offices how they answer certain questions, whether they're willing to even see children, for instance, and what kinds of things do they know about and do differently regarding your particular problem. So, and you may even have to go in for an exam and find out in person what that office is like and what they're offering you as options and choices. So it is tough, and it can get expensive getting second opinions. But if you go to three different mainstream dentists for, you know, second opinions, you're going to basically get variations on the same concepts and the same treatment options. If you want an alternative opinion, if you want a really different point of view, you've got to start looking at getting your questions answered by holistic alternative trained dentists. But like I said, all alternative dentists start out with a mainstream degree. And so it's not all of them have broken away from all of the original training and concepts regarding treatment and options. All right. So you are listening to Dental MD. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. And in a moment after the ads and station break, I'm going to return and talk about children and the choices. And the first aspect I'm going to talk about is decay in very young children. If you want to reach my office to ask questions and possibly make an appointment, you can reach us by phone, 425-427-8899, or you can email us appointments@naturaldentist.com to get questions answered. All right, I'll be right back after this break.
So how long has it been since you've been to the dentist?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
I know, going to the dentist can be tough, but did you know that healthy teeth lead to a healthy body?
I know what you're thinking. All dentists are alike. They lure you in for the free exam or, you know, complimentary cleaning. And before you know it, wham, huge dental bill. And did you even need all that work? Well, why not try a different approach? Natural Dental Health Associates in Issaquah specializes in taking care of you. Their easy, no gimmick, honest approach to dentistry will have you forgetting you're actually in a dentist's office. And the best thing is, they're all natural. Yep, no mercury, nickel, or other harmful chemicals are used. Click on your media player now and get started on the road to better dental health today. Or call 425-427-8899. Natural Dental Health Associates is a proud sponsor of the Dental MD Radio Show, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Seattle, Tacoma, Antwerp. That's right. We're streamed worldwide on our app and on the web at 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dental MD. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. And today I am talking about alternatives for children's dentistry. In particular, the first kids I'm going to talk about are the very young kids under the age of 3. So if you have young kids or you have friends with young kids or grandchildren or whatever, children in your life, you may have heard something about, dentistry for kids that have tooth decay. And why would a very young child under the age of 3 get tooth decay? And usually it's just the front four, and usually it's only the upper front four. So there are some theories bouncing around out there about what causes this. One of the favorite culprits for mainstream is that breastfeeding causes it. I do not think that's true, because you can look at a family and the mother breastfed all the children the same way for the same length of time, and 3 of them didn't get decay and 1 did. So, okay, tell me how it could be the breast milk. And that's just one example. We hear this all the time, that parents come in and they say, the other dentist told me I have to stop nursing my baby at night. I have to, this, that. Well, the natural human milk actually has enzymes in it. First of all, it's raw milk, okay? It's raw milk that is full of enzymes, and it has the things in it that are needed to prevent decay. I'll put it that way. Whereas formula that's mixed in a bottle from powder or whatever, that is not alive. It's a dead food. It doesn't have, it may have some enzymes added back in, but it's been heated, it's been processed, and the the decay in young kids really became a problem when children were drinking from bottles all night long. And the other problem is when they're given a sippy cup to take to bed at night, or a bottle at night with juice, because that's highly sugary and very much known to promote decay. And so those are bad ideas. But natural human breast milk kind of got lumped in with feeding the child at night causes decay, period, no matter what you're feeding them. But that just isn't true. Natural human breast milk, in my opinion, does not promote tooth decay. So one of the first things I tell the parents is, let's look at what the other causes might be for this, because I really don't believe it's nursing at night. So children that are very young, under the age of one, frequently they're not even eating anything other than breast milk. So, you know, what could be causing it? And one of the theories is that the lip tie, or the frenum that attaches the lip to the gum tissue, attaches, in some people, it attaches kind of low and close to the teeth. And so there's a theory that saliva can't, you know, get in there, and the lip can't move as freely, and that it's harder to brush those teeth because of this, you know, lip tie. You know, I've seen a lot of lip ties that, as the child gets older, that attachment goes, migrates up away from the teeth as the permanent teeth come in. So if it isn't terribly severe, I generally recommend just waiting and seeing if it migrates. And I've seen a lot of children with low lip ties near the tooth, the gum line of the teeth in the front, who do not have decay. More that don't have decay than do. So that leads me to believe, from my clinical experience, that a lip tie is not the primary cause of decay in the upper front teeth. Now, if you combine that with mouth breathing, and the child is not breathing through the nose, and so the lips are not closing at night, and the, for part of the night at least, the mouth is just hanging open, and those upper front teeth are drying out, that, I believe, is the primary cause of the problem. Because if the child is otherwise healthy, and the saliva, which is supposed to be remineralizing the teeth 24/7, if that saliva is not on the teeth, then it can't be doing its job. And there are also ways to make the saliva better. So how do you get a child to breathe through their nose instead of their mouth? Well, if they're nursing, they have to be able to breathe through their nose, first of all. But if there's been any congestion or allergies, or there's like mold in the house, or there's been a viral illness that caused upper respiratory congestion, that can start the process and the habit of mouth breathing. So it's very important to get that problem solved as quickly as possible and get the child back to nose breathing at night, and nose breathing all the time, preferably, in order to promote the proper development of the nasal passages and the turbinates, which are the curlicue tissues inside the nose and the sinus. And if mouth breathing becomes a habit because of frequent congestion, the nasal passageways will not develop properly. This is a classic example of use it or lose it. If they are using their nasal passages, then those nasal passages will develop. If they're breathing through their mouth, one of the things that starts to happen is the tongue cannot go to the roof of the mouth and provide pressure on the roof of the mouth to help develop the upper arch width. And the upper arch width is the palate, is the one side is the mouth, but the other side of the palate is the nasal passageways. And so when the palate is widened by continual pressure exerted by the tongue, then the nasal passages will also be wider. So if the upper arch is narrow, either because of mouth breathing or because of hereditary or other causes, then the nasal passages will be narrow. And if the child is mouth breathing, the tongue will be low, like I said, not putting pressure on the roof of the mouth where it's supposed to. It'll be low so that the air can come in over the tongue and through the mouth. So the tongue is low. The tongue has a tendency to sit low and put pressure on the lower teeth instead of the upper arch. And the lower teeth can actually become flared. The lower jaw can start to be kind of pushed forward as the oral airway is emphasized because the nasal passages are not developed or are still congested. So it's very important to solve that problem as quickly as you can if you see that starting to happen, because that causes face development changes, and you don't want that, because a few years down the road, that becomes much more difficult to correct. It can be corrected with expanders and orthodontic appliances, but you also have to make sure that the habit of mouth breathing is solved, and sometimes that means myofunctional therapy, where kids go to a specialist that teaches them how to where the tongue goes and to practice putting the tongue in the right place. But if the adenoids and tonsils are overdeveloped, large, enlarged, and are in the way of good breathing through the nose, then, yeah, I'm not a fan of surgery, but sometimes just to get things to go back to normal, sometimes it is recommended. So, but we try to solve that in other ways. We try to get them to outgrow those that tonsil and adenoid problem. But if mouth breathing has become a habit and the adenoids and tonsils are a factor, then they may have to be dealt with just to get everything back to functioning normal so that the nasal passages can develop. All right. So when the child comes in and they have these issues and we talk about all of these possibilities, we also need to talk about what are we going to do about the decay. If there's decay that's already started on those upper front teeth of a child that is under the age of 3, what are your choices? Well, more than likely, if you've been to a dentist already, they have said there is no other option other than, well, you've got two options. One is to do nothing and just let it get worse and get abscesses and possibly a brain infection and can lead to death. And I mean, they'll tell you like terrible, scary things, which can occasionally happen in extreme circumstances. I'm not going to say those things never happen, but a lot of times they will tell you these scary things in order to get you to agree to the only other option that they give you, which I'm going to tell you about a third option other than doing nothing and doing surgery. So what they want you to do, because this is efficient, it gets the job done, you only have to bring the child in for one visit, and they can get all of it done, but they have to put the child under general anesthesia to do it. But they really, dentists these days, this is the gold standard for kids with decay on their primary teeth, especially under the age of 3. And even sometimes under the age of 5 or 6, they still recommend sedation, general anesthesia, to do the dental work. So they have the child they give them the medications and they go under general anesthesia and they go in and they do everything that they think might be needed. And with the Western medicine framework in their mind, of the inevitability of the decay getting worse, they don't believe in remineralizing. They think it's okay to try to do that, but only if you're using fluoride. And generally, they believe it's going to get worse and that if that child is prone to decay, then the next tooth that comes in, that's going to decay. And they just really don't believe that it can be stopped and reversed and normalized. So with that idea that it getting worse and deeper and abscesses is inevitable if they don't do things, they will do root canals on the primary teeth while the child is under if they feel like the decay is deep enough that that could that the nerves could be affected in the future. They'll just go ahead while they've got the child there under general. They'll do the root canals that they think are probably going to become necessary in the near future anyway, and so they do them. And then they put stainless steel crowns or little baby ceramic crowns in the on the front teeth. And then you're all finished. The child wakes up. You're all done. Maybe one follow-up visit to have a look at everything. But that's it. And that's really the only option that they think is a standard of care option. So it's actually time for another break. But when I come back, I'm going to give you another possibility for how to manage and treat decay in young children. Okay, you're listening to Dental MD. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. You can reach us by email, appointments@naturaldentist.com, or phone 425-427-8899. I'll be right back after this break.
So how long has it been since you've been to the dentist? Yeah, I'm talking to you. I know, going to the dentist can be tough. But did you know that healthy teeth lead to a healthy body? I know what you're thinking. All dentists are alike. They lure you in for the free exam or, you know, complimentary cleaning. And before you know it, wham, huge dental bill. And did you even need all that work? Well, why not try a different approach? Natural Dental Health Associates in Issaquah specializes in taking care of you. Their easy, no gimmick, honest approach to dentistry will have you forgetting you're actually in a dentist's office. And the best thing is, they're all natural. Yep, no mercury, nickel, or other harmful chemicals are used. Click on your media player now and get started on the road to better dental health today. Or call 425-427-8899. Natural Dental Health Associates is a proud sponsor of the Dental MD Radio Show, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Tell your friends about Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. You're listening to Dental MD. Excuse me. Okay, Dental MD. Now, we're talking about young children under the age of 3 that have decay on their upper front teeth or any teeth. And in the last segment, I described what the usual and customary and typical and majority treatment is for that problem. But what I recommend is even if the child is really unwilling to open their mouth to even have their teeth looked at, it's if the child's teeth are, in my opinion, are not abscessing or close to abscessing, then I'm going to offer you a third option. The other two options were do nothing and just let it, you know, rot. And the second option was to go under general anesthesia and have everything done that the dentist thinks might be needed in the near future, as well as the current needs, to just make sure that it's efficient and you get everything done and you don't have to do general anesthesia again for a secondary problem. So they just take care of everything that they think might be necessary. So, but a lot of holistic parents are less interested in efficiency and more interested in not having their child be drugged. And I can understand that. I feel the same way about it, although I certainly think that in some circumstances that is what's necessary. I think that if a child does need to have a tooth extracted or something really invasive done, I absolutely think that sedation at some level, especially to the level where the child doesn't remember the procedure, that that's appropriate and that's healthier than having the child be traumatized by a dental visit. Having work done inside your mouth is more traumatizing than a foot or a hand, let's say, because it's right at your head, and it's just scarier, let's say. It just is. And so I think it's appropriate to sedate at some level for invasive procedures on children and frequently for adults as well, obviously. So, but if I don't think that any abscesses or nerves getting infected and dying, that I don't think that that's imminent, then I will suggest the following. I will suggest that we do a series of behavior management visits. And frequently, even in a child that's like 1 to 1.5 years old, we can, after maybe 4 visits or 5, we can get to the point, because we've been like gently looking and cleaning the decay and coaching the parents on diet, nutrition, prevention, oral hygiene at home, all of these things that help slow down the decay process and hopefully arrest the decay. And so, and I'm cleaning the decay at each visit, which is not painful, by the way, because decay has no nerves. Decay is dead, rotted tooth structure, and that can be cleaned away gently, rather easily, without any pain. So that's what we do for several visits, and generally by somewhere between the 3rd and the 6th visit, the child is familiar with us. We're now their buddies. We're not strangers anymore. That age group, you know, when they meet you, you are a stranger and you want to look in their mouth. Well, you know, they may not like that. So, but by the time they've come back a few times for just short visits and they look at the fish and get a prize and play in the toy room, and there's lots of things to do at my office for little kids other than sit in the chair and have me look in their mouth. So I'm each visit, they're having fun with all these other things that we're entertaining them with, and I'm looking at their teeth and cleaning a little bit every time. And then we reach a point where the child can sit still and cooperate for me to dry the teeth, put the filling material on there, and shine a light on it. And we just kind of gradually work our way toward that. Now, if the child becomes wiggly when I'm doing the filling and it gets wet, or, you know, something happens, that is something that I take into consideration, because we have a 2-year warranty. And if I need to replace or add material or redo something or whatever it is, that's free for 2 years after the initial date of the filling itself. So this method has worked very well for many, many families. And a lot of times they have, you know, 3 kids with no decay or minimal decay, and 1 that just seems to have a lot of decay at a young age. And so, you know, we talk about nutrition. We talk about how the teeth are mineralized in utero and the status of the mother's nutrition before the child is born, all of that kind of thing, and the health and nutritional value of the breast milk and mother's diet and all of that kind of thing. And so we're doing nutrition and prevention coaching all along the way. And we get to the point where the child can sit still long enough for me to clean, dry, put a filling in, shine the curing light on it. And sometimes at that point, because the filling material doesn't taste very good, sometimes the appointment is over, like as soon as I can get it cured. And then we have a follow-up visit where I go in and smooth and adjust and polish the new fillings. So what, right? So they go home with a filling that's a little bit rough, and then they come back and we polish that. It's not a big deal. And to me, it's better to leave it like that and have a follow-up visit for polishing the filling than to force the issue while the child is under duress, forcing their mouth open to polish that thing just because I want it polished that day. Well, it's not a life or death thing. Why traumatize that child? So what if the filling is rough for a week and then they come back and that child comes back and sees the fish and plays in the playroom and they're happy to open their mouth so I can polish, because that's no big deal to them on another day. And that is my philosophy. That's how I handle and manage these young kids. And I've been able to do whole mouths of fillings on kids that are 2 and 3 years old because I've built trust. We do things gradually and gently. We always get the child's permission for each and everything, because even though it's a child, yes, there's a line you have to draw. Like, you have to, at some point, you have to do things. And sometimes you have to bargain a little bit with the child. And sometimes you do have to hold them down like that. Just to take a look at something, sometimes these kids, when they first come to us, I mean, we need to look in there, but sometimes they cry when we do that. And it's, then, you know, we keep that part really short, and they get a toy and they come back and they forgive and they get another toy, and we build trust. We build it gradually. But every once in a while, there's a visit where I really do have to look in there and do something, and they protest. Okay, that happens occasionally, but we try to minimize that. And we try to keep it at a level no worse than a child who doesn't want their diaper changed. You as a parent are going to change that diaper anyway, right? And the kid might cry, your child might cry because they want to play, or they don't care if it feels wet or it smells. They don't want their diaper changed right now. You as the parent have decided right now is when that diaper's getting changed, and you're going to have some tears. Okay, we try to make it so that what we're doing is not painful, and sometimes we do have to kind of put our foot down and get something done, or if we've started something, we have to finish it before we can let that child get up and get their prize and you know, talk to the fish and whatever. So yes, that's the worst kind of case for us, is you know, a situation like that. And but what we see is that sometimes parents have been to another dentist, or they've been to us for a while, and then they went to somebody that was closer or on their insurance. And when they come back to me, that child who loved me last time they saw me now won't open their mouth. Now, why is that? Somebody forced something. Now the child comes in, they see the dental chair, and they're already crying. We have had many, many times where children are just being in the dental office feels like, you know, a big no for them, because they had something happen. I don't know what, but something happened where they felt like, you know, traumatized by what they have post-traumatic stress. We've got to build trust all over again in a case like that, which we do. We start slow. We do a ride in the chair and Mr. Thirsty, and, you know, and then that's it for that first visit. Let's just ease our way back in. Let's build trust again. Sometimes we have to do it all over again because of one traumatic experience somewhere else. But, you know, everybody grows up. We all deal with it. You get in the dental chair as an adult, and you overrule all your post-traumatic stress, and you know, you might break into a sweat, but you're still smiling and letting the dentist do their job and whatever. But you might avoid going to the dentist for 5 years at a time, right? That's how some people are. And they only go in when something hurts or is broken and sharp. Or they go in regularly, but they hate it. You know, and this is all post-traumatic stress that can be, it can be dealt with differently than the usual. All right, well, we're heading into a break. You're listening to Dental MD. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. I'm talking about children's dentistry choices today. And you can reach us by phone, 425-427-8899, or by email, appointments@naturaldentist.com. I'll be right back after this break.
So how long has it been since you've been to the dentist? Yeah, I'm talking to you. I know, going to the dentist can be tough. But did you know that healthy teeth lead to a healthy body? I know what you're thinking. All dentists are alike. They lure you in for the free exam or, you know, complimentary cleaning. And before you know it, wham, huge dental bill. And did you even need all that work? Well, why not try a different approach? Natural Dental Health Associates in Issaquah specializes in taking care of you. Their easy, no gimmick, honest approach to dentistry will have you forgetting you're actually in a dentist's office. And the best thing is, they're all natural. Yep, no mercury, nickel, or other harmful chemicals are used. Click on your media player now and get started on the road to better dental health today. Or call 425-427-8899. Natural Dental Health Associates is a proud sponsor of the Dental MD Radio Show, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
No other station delivers this much variety. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. You're listening to Dental MD. Today, I am talking about very young children and tooth decay. So there is a good book that you can get that has a lot of nutritional information in it. A lot of it is aimed at preventing decay and dealing with early decay and remineralizing decay. And what I want to tell you about that is that this book, which is called Cure Tooth Decay, is based on Weston A. Price, DDS, research. Weston Price was a dentist, and he did research in the 1920s and 30s, he was trying to figure out what these different primitive populations that had never been exposed to refined modern foods, which ones of these communities had the least decay and what were they eating? He was trying to figure out what kind of diet was the least likely to be associated with tooth decay. And he didn't find any vegan communities. He did find vegetarian communities, but they were including butter from grass-fed cows, which we sometimes call grass-fed butter, which is kind of funny, but it's the butter from the milk from grass-fed cows. And generally, the cows are eating the early spring grass. They were eating fermented foods like sauerkraut and other fermented and pickled vegetables, and they were including insects in their diet and eggs and things like that. So even if they weren't slaughtering animals for food, they were still eating foods from animals. And one of the key things that he called it Activator X, and he felt that this Activator X was a really key nutrient for decay prevention and the treatment of decay. And it turns out to be plentiful in the butter from grass-fed cows and in cod liver oil. And it turns out, after many years of looking at this and research, and what it's been decided is that that key ingredient is vitamin K2, not K1, which is associated with blood clotting, but K2, which is high in cod liver oil and butter from grass-fed cows, among other things. You can find it in other foods as well, but those are the two where it's the highest usually. And it seems to make a very big difference for the amount of decay found in a population if they eat a lot of those two foods, among other things. And I guess vitamin K2 is also in fermented foods like sauerkraut and other kimchi and just other kinds of fermented vegetable foods, vegetarian foods. Now, there is a type of vitamin K2 that is different, and it is a vegan, totally vegan source of vitamin K2 from fermented soybeans. It's a slightly different molecule, and I really don't know whether that particular version of K2 is also important for slowing down and arresting and treating early decay. So I can't say for sure about that, although it is still considered a type of vitamin K2. But in Weston Price's research, the K2 that he talked about was from cod liver oil and sometimes fermented cod liver oil and the butter from grass-fed cows, which has a high quantity of it, as well as vitamin A and vitamin D. So one of the things that sometimes people misunderstand about remineralizing decay is if a tooth, and I've talked about this in other shows as well, if a tooth has demineralization starting and there's no hole forming yet, so in other words, it has not caved in, it is not a cavity yet, but it's decaying, it's got demineralization that is weakening the tooth structure under the surface. That happens for a while before the surface gets so thin and weak that it just crumbles and caves in, and then you have the actual hole, which is called a cavity. Before it caves in, you can remineralize that 100% completely and not end up with a hole. That's good. So that's very important to do. And actually, your saliva, if it's healthy and plentiful, and if you're stressed, you will have less saliva. And if you're dehydrated, you'll have less saliva, et cetera. There are ways to make your saliva as good as possible to help continually 24/7 remineralize the surfaces of the teeth, which is what it's supposed to do. But let's see, where was I going with that? Okay. Right. If the tooth has already caved in and there's a hole, if it's a small hole, you can still remineralize the inside of the hole, but it won't fill in. It will not become a flat, smooth surface ever again. It will always be a broken surface. Now, if it's very shallow, sometimes it can be easily cleaned with a toothbrush and it's not near the nerve and it's not hurting and the surface has hardened back up. It's not sticky or soft. Food isn't catching in there. Okay, that's probably okay to leave like that. I mean, if it's in an area like between the teeth or an area that's hard to reach where you can't keep it clean or it's catching food or plaque is growing in there, then you should get it restored. That means get a filling to make that tooth the right shape again so that food and plaque don't grow in the hole, live in the hole, and make that hole deeper. Because if you can't keep it clean, it's going to demineralize. When you've got bacteria and plaque and food and everything else getting caught in there, you, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to stop that decay process entirely. So in that case, I recommend getting the decay as arrested as you can, and at the same time, get that hole restored back to a normal tooth shape. And there are a number of reasons why that's necessary to do. One is if it's on the biting surface, then it has you've broken away a part of the tooth that was intended for chewing and grinding food, so you've lost some chewing efficiency. If it's between the teeth, then you run the risk of having the other teeth drift and shift. And if it's on the biting surface, the teeth that are supposed to chew against that area can drift as well because they're no longer stable biting against a nice solid surface. So they will begin to droop and drop and shift. And that will cause some severe problems. This can cause problems in kids with spacing and the need for braces and recreating the space for the permanent teeth. I've seen teeth get almost completely blocked out and not able to erupt in into their correct places in the growing mouth because of decay and early tooth loss and not maintaining those spaces. That's what space maintainers are for, to keep teeth where they belong until the permanent teeth come in. And in adults, it's called a posterior bite collapse when you're missing teeth and the other teeth tilt into the space and then the teeth that chew against those drop down and the entire vertical height of the bite in the back teeth can shift. And if it's only on one side, you can sometimes end up with an unstable TMJ, which is your jaw joint. Muscles can go into spasm. Other teeth get damaged because the bite is not level. And even, anyway, needless to say, there are some consequences down the road if you've lost tooth structure. Even if you've remineralized things and the decay process has stopped, it is still important in a lot of cases to restore the teeth back to normal shapes for function so that other teeth don't drift and shift and everything functions the way it's designed to. All right. We're getting close to the end of today's show, and I didn't get to very much about why to start ortho early. I started talking a little bit about loss of space because of decay, but there are other reasons to start early with space maintainers and creating space, enlarging the space for the permanent teeth so that they come into the right places. And in the next show, I will talk more about kids and more about alternative treatments and alternative philosophies for treatment. So you've been listening to Dental MD. I'm Dr. Jessica Sapoff. Today we talked about early decay, like in the very young children under the age of 3. And what your choices really are. And you can reach us by phone, 425-427-8899, or by email, appointments@naturaldentist.com, to ask questions and make appointments. All right, thank you for listening. I'll be back next week.